welcome to Travel Fun. My name is Mary Beth Clementi, and I'm the host of this talk show on travel. And this week, I have top travel writer Everett Potter on the phone. He's vacationing in southwestern Maine, and I have known Everett for a number of years. And he has written for many top U.S. publications, and he also has his own blog, and that is Everett Potter's Travel Report, better known as EverettPotter.com. And I would like to welcome Everett to Travel Fun. Hi, Everett. It's great to have you here.
How are you?
Good.
Good.
How long have you been a travel writer now?
I think I've been a travel writer for around 25 years. I was trying to figure this out the other day. 25 or 26 years would be an accurate number. Started back in the mid-80s and wrote for a whole bunch of publications and finally landed a gig writing for the New York Times Syndicate, and that lasted for a good 18 years and wrote for many other publications in between and still do.
And you mentioned the New York Times Syndicate. I think I should divulge all. That's how we first got to know each other. You wrote review on my book, The Riches of France, A Shopping and Touring Guide to the French Provinces. That was a number of years ago. But that was at the time when you were writing for the New York Times Syndicate. What are some of the changes you've seen happen in the travel writing world since your beginning?
I think it's constantly changing in front of our eyes as we speak right now. I mean, not only in terms of blogging, but in terms of Facebook and Twitter. I think it's changing in terms of more publications developing an online component. So sometimes you have a print publication, an online publication. Sometimes you have only an online publication. And I think we've seen a flurry of new travel publications online, some good, some not so good. But it's changed a lot. I mean, a lot of newspapers no longer have a travel section. A lot of newspapers are no longer newspapers. They no longer exist. So that's probably the biggest change I've seen in the last 25 years. There were many, many healthy newspaper travel sections when I started, and there are a handful right now.
And now, as you said, so much of it is happening online.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to dig right into that and talk about what you think of all of the social media. And we're kind of in a funny position because we're both published writers, me being more of a book person and you articles, and then we started our own blogs.
That's right.
So we're in a different league from most of the bloggers out there that are sort of putting up their first self-published pieces. And what are your thoughts on these forums that you have out there? And everybody has an opinion, it seems.
Well, blogging is interesting because you're right. There are a lot of people who are putting up their first pieces and their first impressions, and it's basically self-publishing writ large at this point in time. Having been a journalist for all these years, there's a huge difference in quality. I mean, the fact that if you've trained as a journalist, you've learned to report, you've learned to fact check, you've learned to edit, and you've learned to write, and you've learned to write on deadline, and you've learned to write stories that you hope anyway are interesting. And there's enough editors out there who'll tell you whether your story is interesting or not and what to do to fix it or correct it. So a lot of the blogosphere has stories that are completely unedited, not fact-checked, very much about the writer as opposed to the subject, and interesting only insofar as you're interested in the subject who's writing the story. So, there's a lot of noise out there, but I don't see that content per se has gotten measurably better because of it.
Yeah, there's just sort of more ramblings.
There's a lot of navel-gazing going on, that's for sure.
Yes, obviously. And what about sites such as TripAdvisor.com, where people can post their impressions of a hotel or another travel experience?
I think, I think TripAdvisor is basically it's a brilliant idea, and I think at first there was a certain amount of suspicion about it because the sampling was too small. You would have opinions about a hotel in Rome or a hotel in Bangkok, and four people would have written in and given their opinion about the room service or the hotel room or the quality of the service itself. Now you might have 400 people. And they basically have worked it and worked the model to develop a critical mass, and I think that's where its real strength is. I mean, you're always going to find extremes in terms of opinion. The place was the worst hotel I ever stayed in. The place was the most amazing hotel I ever stayed in. And somewhere in between those two usually lies the truth. And take my hat off to them. I think they've done a terrific job in terms of quantifying it. I look at TripAdvisor all of the time, and a lot of people I know who travel a fair bit wouldn't think of booking a hotel unless they essentially fact-check it on TripAdvisor.
Interesting to have your opinion, because I know it does carry quite a bit of weight in mm-hmm. the travel world, and I have mixed feelings about it. And the reason is I've checked some of the reviews of different properties on TripAdvisor mm-hmm. that I've experienced, and I haven't exactly agreed with everything. Mm-hmm. And also, I kind of feel like, well, who's this person that's sort of a self-appointed expert?
Right.
Here's my conclusion. I agree with what you're saying, but I think that people should check a variety of sources when they're planning a trip, that maybe TripAdvisor, also friends and families, and even calling up the hotel directly and asking very pointed questions
yeah.
and going with their gut.
You know, TripAdvisor's just added fairly recently this Facebook component. So when you go on, you can actually dial in your friends and see, have you stayed in this hotel in New York? And if not, where have you stayed and where would you recommend? So they've taken that step to try to integrate the two, which I think is pretty noteworthy. I think critical mass is the thing. I'm actually heading out to South Dakota in a couple of weeks, and we were looking at some places near Rapid City on TripAdvisor just for the heck of it. And, you know, when there's four reviews or two reviews or you know, seven reviews, it doesn't tell you a lot about a place where, you know, there's hundreds of people maybe staying in the course of a month or a week even. So you really want to have the numbers up there to be able to judge. The other thing is hotels do change, and you can look at a Frommer's guide, which, you know, is a terrific guide online. I use Frommer's just for a quick reference a lot online. But the lag time between when a journalist or guidebook writer visits the property and when it's published and how long it stays up there can be a couple of years. So a hotel that was once great can go downhill when ownership changes, the GM changes, something else changes, the economy changes, and they start laying people off, and all of a sudden the service just goes down the tubes. And that's why I find TripAdvisor good, because they can keep a lot of properties honest, and you'll see more and more general managers of hotels responding directly to complaints online, and it's evident which ones are legitimate complaints and which ones are just carping because someone didn't get, you know, the perfect room or something like that.
Right. And then also this whole notion of being self-published. I think there's some egos out there and wannabe travel writers.
Absolutely right. There are people who make who love that. And, you know, there are certain, you could sort of skew it. I don't know if anyone's gone in and actually analyzed the data, but there seem to be an awful lot of English people who were lamenting the fact that there's not a tea kettle in their room to make tea, regardless of where they're staying, whatever country or property level they're staying at. So it's comical at times.
Well, I can go with that, being a tea drinker. It's always awful to make tea in the coffee pot.
There you go.
There we go. Where can you find, first of all, I want to say the Wall Street Journal cited your travel report, Everett Potter's travel report, as a terrific mix of profiles and interviews.
I'm happy to have that. Yeah.
All designed to make the best use of your travel budget. That's a nice compliment. Where can you find the most value these days for your travel dollars?
Good question. I think everyone, about a year ago when we seemed to be deep in the heart of the recession, not that we're that far out of there right now, there were discounts everywhere and value wasn't as hard to come by. And now I think prices have gone up a little bit and people are trying to get back to some sort of normal or some sort of new normal. And I think that if you shop hard, you're going to find value in most places right now. For example, I was looking, I was doing some research yesterday in Ashford Castle in Ireland. Now, Ashford Castle, I think the published rate for two people with breakfast, and it's a grand castle, it's a wonderful castle, it's just a marvelous hotel in the west of Ireland. I think the published rate is around $750 a night, and that's for a fairly, you know, it's a nice room, but it's not the presidential suite by any means. I think right now their special price that they're offering is in the vicinity of $300 a night or $325, something like that. The point is even grand places are discounting. So if you can find if you think that's a fair price to pay, then you're getting great value at a hotel like that. But I see a lot of city hotels in the United States discounting a great deal too. A lot of them are doing it through value-added packages. They'll throw in breakfast, they'll throw in a spa treatment, they'll throw in something else to entice you to come in for a couple of nights. And if one hotel, say in Chicago, doesn't have it, a price that suits you or a deal that suits you, shop a little harder because you'll probably find one. And it seems to be extending throughout the entire season right now. It doesn't seem to be, it's strictly shoulder season in terms of discounts or low season. It's just there.
And where do you go to find the best discounts, let's say, on lodging? Do you contact the hotel directly, or do you go to a site such as Expedia?
Yeah, I mean, Expedia used to be the go-to place. I find a lot of the time now that hotels have taken back the discounting, and they've put it back on their own website.
Exactly.
And they don't want to be giving away. Their margins are much slimmer, so they don't want to be giving away any more than they have to. So if you go on the websites of many properties, you're going to see either as a pop-up or as a fairly prominent box or box of information, sidebar, that there's a bed and breakfast package, a romance package, a getaway package, something along those lines. I was just in St. Lucia last week and staying at two wonderful hotels, Ladera, which is down in the southern part of St. Lucia, and then Cap Maison, which is a newer resort at the northern tip of St. Lucia. And both were doing fairly brisk business, but it's a funny thing. People still, I think, are reluctant to go to the Caribbean in the summertime, and yet, given the weather the United States, or much of the United States, has had this summer, 85 degrees and trade winds is not a bad way to go, let's put it that way. And the prices are remarkably good. They're much lower in the summertime and all the way through the fall, than they would be in, say, high season.
And the name of those two properties again?
First one is Ladera. Ladera is famous because it has, I think, just 32 rooms. And each of it's on a cliff, looking down at the Pitons, the highest mountains, I believe, in the Caribbean. You're about 1,000 feet above the beach, and your room is missing the fourth wall. So it's like living in kind of an artsy Robinson Crusoe or Swiss Family Robinson treehouse. And it's one of the most relaxing places I've ever stayed. The other one is called Cap Maison, which is more Spanish hacienda style, and it's up the northern tip of St. Lucia, and it's got a terrific beach, and it's got little niceties like a champagne zip line. So you can order a bottle of champagne on a private deck as the waves are lapping around you, and from the bar, which is about 100 feet above you on a cliff, they send a bottle of champagne and two glasses down in a bucket on a zip line. So I think it's the best use of a zip line I've ever heard, frankly.
That sounds like a great fun, albeit a bit of a gimmick. Let's talk about the airlines.
Yeah.
The other day I heard that Spirit Airlines is starting to charge for carry-ons.
Yes.
What do you think of this and the current state of the airline business in general?
Well, they're trying to nickel and dime us for everything, aren't they? I heard today, and I this would have to be corroborated, that they're going to start Spirit's going to start charging you to speak to a human being as well. Seriously, if you call up and you're on eternal, you know, hold, or you're dealing with voice prompts, that to talk to a person is actually going to cost you money. I'm not sure how they're going to charge for that, but I'll leave that to them. It was bound to happen. I mean, when I saw Spirit was charging for carry-on luggage, which was announced a few weeks back or a month or two back, I wasn't surprised at all. I was just surprised that someone else hadn't beat them to the punch. There's just so much revenue at this moment that the airlines are watching getting stuffed in the overhead bins that they wish they could be charging for as a checked bag, that it was inevitable they were going to do this. I was on JetBlue flying to St. Lucia from New York, and I like JetBlue a lot. I mean, it's a terrific airline, and it flies to a lot of places I want to go to, and the seats are roomier and comfortable, and they have seat back videos and satellite radio. But if you want a blanket and a pillow on that flight, you have to pay $7. So they're charging $7 for that. They'll still give you a bag of Terra chips and a soft drink, but anything else is charged, you know, they'll charge you for.
Right, you have to make sure you've got lots of bills on you.
No bills, credit cards.
Credit cards.
Only credit cards.
So, how do you book flights? Do you use do you go directly to the airlines?
I will shop hard on some of the websites, depending on where I'm going, but I often find that the best fares, domestically anyway, are on the airline's website. And that's largely because, again, they've taken back the power, they've taken back the discounting. And you're going to find, you know, within a dollar or two, sometimes they're $10 or so, the best fare on a American's website or United's website. It has gotten more competitive. I think Expedia did away with their fees. They used to have a $5 or $10 booking fee for booking airfares, and that's gone now because they were losing customers because of that fare, because of the charge. If I'm going overseas, though, and it depends where I'm going, I will look at sites like kayak.com, which I love. I think it's a very easy site to use, and it's got a great grid, and you can play with it fast, and it responds quickly. This is a site called Mobissimo, which is good for some of the more intricate European itineraries. I also look at Fairchase and Fairsearch.com. Both good places to go in search of fares. But at the end of the day, if you're just flying from New York to Denver, say, or something like that, you're often going to find the best fare right on the airline's own website.
Let's get back to the hotels. And I was in a fairly high-end hotel, I won't mention the name, recently, in one of our beautiful mountain towns. And I was just amazed at some of the cutbacks there. And, for example, there wasn't daily housekeeping.
Wow.
And I found that out when I came back to the room at the end of the first day,
mm-hmm.
which was a bit of a shock. Had I been told that upon check-in, and there isn't any housekeeping, but if you need extra towels or anything, feel free to call. But nothing indicated that there was not daily housekeeping. The concierge, instead of having a real person, it was a table piled up with brochures.
Wow.
And all this, for example, had good ratings on TripAdvisor.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't valet service in the summer. So that seemed to be kind of announcing where the hotels might be headed, or a lot of hotels, in response to the recession.
True. Yeah, I've noticed a lot of nickel and diming myself. I mean, it can be anything from the toiletries you find in a nice 4 or 5 star hotel, or even a 3 star. I mean, someone's trying to economize, so the level of quality of toiletries has changed. At times, it's cleanliness, too. I mean, I'll notice, you know, things have piled up. Dishes in the hallway. You know, someone has room service. They put their tray out in the hallway. And you come back 8 hours later, and that tray is still there with the same, you know, leftover French fries and coffee or whatever. just sitting there waiting to be picked up, and there's not enough staff to do so. There's no question hotels have had to take the recession very hard and had to deal with it in their own way. And cutting back, I mean, eliminating a concierge is you know, taking one salary out of the loop. Much cheaper to do a table with a bunch of brochures. It won't do much for you if you're trying to book a hotel, book a restaurant in town, or find out the best, you know, something, some other cultural thing in the town from a brochure. But unfortunately, that is the way. And I think, you know, we're going to be living with this for a while.
Let's talk about your newsletter site / blog, EverettPotter.com.
Right.
And that's two T's in Everett and two T's in Potter.
That's right. It's been going for 4 years now, just over 4 years. I'm in the midst of a redesign. It's going to look quite different in a short period of time, a couple of weeks. It started kind of as an outgrowth of all the columns and stories I was writing for various publications, since I write for Ski, and I write for Forbes Life, and National Geographic Traveler, and I write for Travel and Leisure, and et cetera. And all of these stories and assignments bring me places where I have more stories than I know what to do with, and that was the original sort of impetus behind starting the blog. It quickly snowballed into something else. It's still that, but a lot of good friends and colleagues who I've known for, you know, much of my career, came to me offering me stories of their own. And at this point in time, I have about 20 to 25 contributors who contribute on a, you know, either occasional or frequent basis. And it's terrific. And it's really given the site a lot of critical mass. And we talk about a variety of things. I mean, there's a value component to it. I'm going to tell you where to go, to a place where I think you're going to find some really good value for your money. There's a lot of adventure travel stuff. There's a great writer named Steve Germanic who contributes a weekly adventure travel column. There's the Gourmet magazine's, the late Gourmet magazine's, former European correspondent, Alexander Lebrano, writes a letter from Paris once a month about his incredible restaurant finds in Paris, the classic American in Paris. I have people who write about going high rope climbing in St. Anton on the Arlberg in Austria. There's a piece this week on a Winslow Homer exhibit in Portland, Maine, which was the home of Winslow Homer.
Oh, it sounds wonderful.
So I try to, there's a cultural aspect. That particular column is called The Artful Traveler, and it could be about an upcoming Picasso exhibit in Zurich this fall, or it could be, again, about something local and a little more reachable for anyone who's here in the United States.
And people can subscribe to your newsletter.
Yes, free subscription. Just go on and click on and just sign up with your email. The other thing I've been doing of late, and it's proved to be incredibly popular, is running some contests. I'm currently running a contest for a three-night stay at Mohonk Mountain House, which is about 100 or so miles north of New York City.
I've been there. It's quite the place.
Isn't it great?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a great Adirondack-style lodge. It's vast, and it's a three-night getaway for two people with all meals and quite a few spa treatments thrown in as well. So you can enter every day, and good luck, basically. But we just did one for Key West. We had a two-night, a four-night stay in two different hotels in Key West. We had one with Carnival Cruises and Wild Dunes in Charleston, South Carolina.
And what do you have to do to enter?
You simply have to put in your name and click, and you've entered. So it's proven to be incredibly popular, and we've got a lot more coming up. We've got one in Puerto Rico coming up. We have another one in the Keys coming up, and we have one in California coming up at Terranea Resort, I believe. So it's great.
That's at EverettPotter.com. Everett, you have a trip that you're going to be the guest walker on, if I may say that.
Guest walker is a great way to describe
guest
it.
Guest walker. Tell us about that.
Yes, it's a trip in England. It's a walking trip in England with a company called the Wayfarers. The Wayfarers are probably the quintessential English Walking Company.
And I've heard a lot about them.
It's soft adventure. They organize a trip where you get up in the morning and you put on your walking boots, hiking boots, and you walk in the English countryside. And you might have a lunch in a field. You might have lunch at a pub. And you stay at a different country inn, classic English country inn, 300, 400, 500-year-old inn, every single night, a different one every night. And in doing so, you cross some of the most beautiful landscapes in the world. So the one I'm doing is in Devon in the south of England. And it starts in Dartmoor, and it's a seven-night trip. And we start by going to Agatha Christie's house. She had a house just outside Dartmouth where she wrote and relaxed, I think. It's part of the National Trust in Britain and just opened to the public in the last year. We're going to start there. And then we're going to walk through Exmoor and Dartmoor, famous moors in the south of England. The moors were the setting for probably the most famous Sherlock Holmes story of all, The Hound of the Baskervilles. Arthur Conan Doyle said it there. It's a beautiful, beautiful country. The inns are incredible. The walking is great. Walking in on this particular trip is somewhere between 10 and 14 miles a day. So it's a good stretch of the legs, as they say in England.
That is.
And it's uphill and dale, literally, and climbing stone walls and going on old paths. And again, old paths in England could be 800 or 900-year-old paths. So
burning off all the pub food.
And there is the pub food, and the fact that English food has gotten a heck of a lot better than when I first started doing these types of walks. I did one years ago. I did the coast-to-coast walk, literally, from the Irish Sea over to the English Channel through from the Lake District over through Yorkshire. That was amazing. And I've walked in the Peak District in the central part of England. And I've walked in the Isle of Skye in Scotland and various other places. And I think, you know, I've walked other parts of the world, certainly, and done a lot of hiking. But I think for this kind of trip, England is just the perfect place to do it.
And what time of year is that, Everett?
We're going in the end of September. We're going about, I think, the trip kicks off on September 26th. So,
and it's coming
it'll be a seven-night trip, and it's coming up. So, and there's still a few spots left. If anyone's interested, they can go on my website, and they'll see. They can find information about me leading the trip for the Wayfarers.
Oh, that sounds like great fun, and that's at everettpotter.com. Everett, sadly, we're coming up on the half hour.
Oh my goodness!
Didn't that go by fast? I didn't even take a break.
It just flew. Well, Mary Beth, it's been great being on with you again.
It's been really fun. I am going to put this up as a podcast.
Oh, great.
On my blog, and that's bonjourcolorado.com. And people should find that up there within a short while. And
that's great.
It's a good way to connect with you. And is there anything you'd like to add, Everett?
I care to add? No, I think that's about it. I think I'm happily sitting beside my a lake in Maine that I've been coming to since I was 8 years old. So it's one of my happiest places in the world for me, and it's a glorious day here, and I'm thrilled to be here.
Even travel writers need a vacation.
You bet, absolutely.
Especially, absolutely. I should say, especially travel writers. I've been visiting with Everett Potter. From Everett Potter's Travel Report. The website is everettpotter.com. Everett, thank you very much, and have a great rest of your vacation and wonderful travels.
Thanks, Mary Beth, and same to you.
Take care.
Great travels.
Bye-bye.
Come fly with me. Let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on, fly with me. We'll float down in the blue. Fly with me, float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Fly with me. We'll take off in the blue.